From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Welcome to Soundings. Multi-ethnic societies and global politics, those are the topics this week on Soundings. My guests are two historians, Hedva Ben-Israel and Emmanuel Gutman of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Hedva Ben-Israel worked on a forthcoming book about moral judgment in modern historiography. The ideal of a harmonious world order, as old as Plato's Republic and as modern as the United Nations, remains elusive, perhaps more so than ever with the emergence over the last two centuries of multi-ethnic societies. These are cultural and political combinations of race, language, religion, and culture in nations such as South Africa, Canada, and Israel. How did multi-ethnic societies originate? And how do historians measure their impact upon modern international politics? Here is Hedva Ben-Israel.
Multi-ethnic societies are, of course, the general rule today. And what we mean by that is that they do not absolutely conform to the ideal of the nation state, that is the homogeneous society in a nation state. In other words, a state which includes various ethnic or cultural or linguistic groups.
And when you use the term nation state, you would be talking what, along some sort of the lines of a historical model?
Yes, do I have that exactly. Right? The whole thing we must realize is quite a new topic, and it's a new phenomenon. It exists only about 200 years. Before that, people didn't worry very much about who composed the state.
Right.
But since the rise of nationalism about 200 years ago, all the and the ideal of nationalism being the perfect overlapping of a cultural unit and a cultural group and a linguistic group and a state, since the appearance of this ideal, cases which did not conform to it seem to stand out as needing some sort of correction.
Emmanuel Gutman, give me a sense of history here. How does the multi-ethnic society or social unit, how does it evolve? Hedva Ben-Israel has said that it's about 200 years old. Where do we look for its historical origins?
Basically, the historical origins are in Europe, or let's say in Central and Western Europe, where 200, 300 years ago, certain states emerged, where there was a unity from the national point of view, or what people later conceived to be a unity or homogeneity on the national side.
What countries would you have in mind here,
for example? For instance, France is a kingdom, but there was a big discussion about it. There still is. About Great Britain, which appeared to have been, and it was always used to be called a nation state. Later on, or actually now, we do know, and the people in Great Britain do know, that it is not really a one nation state, but a multi-nation state. And there was, of course, historically also the attempt in the 20th century, specifically at the end of World War I and later, to create one nation states in the sense that you try to redraw boundaries in Europe which would conform with this principle. This is the principle of Wilson's principle of self-determination. That is to say, you would like to, out of a multi-ethnic empire like the Russian or the specifically the Austrian one, you say you will make a Polish state, which was supposed to be a state in which only Poles live. It appeared that even at that time was absolutely impossible. Or you have a Czechoslovakian state, which appeared you have a multi, because you're Czechs and you've got Slovaks, actually you had some others. So it was very difficult because people don't live so neatly in territorial groups. They sort of intermingle, and history has made this intermingling.
History, in other words, is very messy. Why, for example, would this uniformity be so desirable in contrast to a multi-ethnic composition?
It's very hard to talk about desirability because, I mean, these things are relative. Some people think it's desirable and some people think it isn't.
Right.
And there are certainly rival ideologies to the one of homogeneity. But since you've mentioned history, I would like to point this out, that when we trace the past of the multi-ethnic problems of today, mm-hmm. We certainly go back in history to about 200 years, as we said. But it's the idea that evolved, but the idea changed its setting and its context. And in different contexts, it means different things. I mean, for France and Germany, mm-hmm. it was the ideal of the homogeneous cultural nation state seemed natural. These are historical nations, very large nations. They could build up strong states in which one culture would be central. Mm-hmm. But when this idea was taken from Western Europe and transposed to other places, as we've heard, to Eastern Europe or even outside Europe, then soon the historical idea clashes with historical reality, mm-hmm. because there are a great many more ethnic units, ethnic groups and cultures in the world than can be states.
Well, my sense is that you would be talking about at political or ideological levels, a kind of an oppression of people or ideas or cultural expressions that elements in a society don't like, they want to get rid of, they want uniformity. Are we on the right track here, Emmanuel?
Well, I would put it this way. Historically speaking, the creation, the evolvement of the so-called strong state, mm-hmm. initially was really based on central governmental power, the mm-hmm. king, let's say the French king, who created his French kingdom. But with the French Revolution, it wasn't only nationalism which came in, but the notion of democracy. And democracy really meant that you have a nation in the sense that we all are alike. Uh-huh. And we all, for this reason, we all have the same privileges or the same rights. Uh-huh. And so you had to substitute for strong central government some sort of a notion which would make the strong state tick. And that could be done only, so it was thought, by some people, if everybody is alike. That is to say, everybody is of the same nation. Mm-hmm. So in order to create this legitimacy for the state, that it will be accepted by everybody as his state, this right. was important. Otherwise, this state would fall apart. There would be dissensus. Take African cases. Take the case of, let's say, Tanzania, mm-hmm. which is a state created out of dozens, actually almost 100 different tribes. So they knew this state would not be able to continue to exist if there was not some overall kind of feeling of Tanzanian nationality, mm-hmm. overriding tribal loyalties, mm-hmm. and this sort of thing.
Ahead for Ben Israel.
I would say you were asking what the core characteristics would be for, and I would say that it's more than anything a question of group self-identity or self-consciousness, mm-hmm. and it may be caused by race, it may be caused by religion. It varies a great deal from part to part. I mean, for instance, if you look at in Northern Ireland, mm-hmm. you have separate religions right. of people who are very similar, and you think it's just a religious quarrel, but it isn't. It really two nations and two cultures and so forth.
We could be back to the word tribe, couldn't we? I mean, there you have a word that embraces what race and class and language and yet is not any one of those particularly.
Yes, but this takes us back to origins.
Right.
And but if we're looking at the scene in our own times, mm-hmm. then we would say that group collective identities can be caused by any or none of these characteristics, mm-hmm. and you have very different cases in this. I think I would stress very much the consciousness and the ideal that people are pursuing, because if you look, for instance, at two countries that have talked about the ideal of the melting pot,
right.
take the United States and take our country Israel, mm-hmm. both are talking about melting pot, but we really mean different things by it, because the American melting pot is meant means that people conform to a set of ideas and to a sort of universal culture more than to anything else. It doesn't really mean necessarily mean mingling, right, biologically, racially mingling. Whereas when we talk about the melting pot, the Israel melting pot, we mean a sort of restoration of the ancient nation, which mm-hmm. is a mingling of the European and the North African and the groups. And I would like to say something about the great proliferation of ethnic groups demanding various kinds of rights today. And I think this is part, people think of the ethnic awakening and so forth. I think this is part not of any kind of greater suffering for ethnic groups, small groups in minorities in the world of today. I think it's rather the opposite. It's a question of great confidence that they have that the state would, what the state is there anyway mm-hmm. to depend on, to draw benefits from,
right,
and so that you, it's time really to get further luxuries like collective identities and cultural special privileges, etc. Mm-hmm. I think this is how modern ethnic group policies differ from what ethnic demands were at an earlier stage in the development of national aspirations, when it was really a question of getting rid of an oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, if groups within Canada, I mean, say native groups, demand special rights, is not because they feel that they're going, that some action is being aimed against them, but it's rather that they feel they want to get something special that they haven't had before.
It's an affirmative kind of thing, in other words. Emmanuel Gottman?
Well, it's affirmative in the sense from the point of view of an abstract idea of the modern, sovereign, to a very large extent, unicultural, homogeneous state. But I mean, this we talked about this already in the sense that actually around the world today there are very few
mm-hmm.
states of this sort of thing. Why it's been much of a problem, why it's been talked about, there are really basically, I would say, two reasons, historical reasons. One is, I mean, this is the way I see this. This ethnicity, as we just sort of been emphasizing all along, really is tantamount to saying that we're talking about nationalities which do not coincide with state boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are two things. So, first of all, it's a nationality. And I would have thought that there were at least expectations on the side of some people in the West at the end of World War II that nationalism run wild and crazy by fascist movement has had its day. And that will not be anymore the prime mover of people. And now, so we see, well, we are coming back to the old stage, which we thought we had overcome. The second part, and this is the second aspect, really is the decolonization of the world. That is to say, the independence of colonial states. So you want to have some sort of order of permanence. And you thought that the permanence is given by creating national states with national boundaries accepted by everybody around the world, and that will be the world picture for the next hundreds of years, for many, many centuries. Now, some of these movements, in any event, are actually sort of criticizing this or are attacking it and say there's nothing fine about these borders because these state boundaries, the way they exist today, do not allow self-determination mm-hmm. for some of our ethnic groups. So what do we do about them?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really some sort of a revisionism of what looked to be the permanent world order mm-hmm. that why this is such an important problem.
Mm-hmm. Emmanuel Gutman and Hedva Ben Israel from the Hebrew University. Our topic is multi-ethnic societies. Why did the American experiment work as a multi-ethnic society? Was it, let's be specific. Was it, for example, the Constitution? Is there something in the air that people come to this country and say, I'm going to try to get along? What's going on, Hedva?
Because the ideal, the American ideal, was to unite people not around a certain ethnic or historical culture necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was, of course, the Anglo-Saxon culture at the core of it, but the ideal was transcendence. It amounted to uniting a people and around a certain universal ideals, mm-hmm. and I think acculturating to a universal idea and subscribing to a constitution which embodied these mm-hmm. universalist ideals helped to create the ideal of pluralism, which later evolved.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You're listening to a discussion about multi-ethnic societies and international politics. My guests are two historians, Hedva Ben Israel and Emmanuel Gutman of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. According to Hedva Ben Israel and Emmanuel Gutman, the political strengths and weaknesses of multi-ethnic societies depend not so much upon hope for the perfectibility of human nature as on a growing cultural sophistication among the nations of the world. For example, how do the relative merits and drawbacks of the American political experiment provide signposts for multi-ethnic societies, both in the West and in third world nations? All right, now, Emmanuel Gutman, what would be this ideal? Let's be cynical and say that it was money, that everybody has an opportunity to go out and make a lot of money to become a success, the Puritan work ethic, all of that stuff. That's at the core of what the American ideal. Is it that alone, or where else do we look for some explanations for the fact that America as a political experiment has worked?
Well, I would say two things. First of all, on the negative side is to say, because you mentioned the Constitution, from what I know about the working of the Constitution, I would say that the Constitution is terrific from many points of view, but not from the point of view of this multi-ethnic problem. Mm-hmm. Because the state system, and this is where we were talking about the federal system, does not really answer this question of a multiplicity or multi-ethnic society, because it's cut in a different way. Mm-hmm. This federalism, the good case to look at federalism or the constitution, the federal constitutionalism or constitutional federalism, and in the multi-ethnic aspect, that would be Switzerland, for instance, where uh-huh. you really have some sort of a problem. I'd like just to add another dimension of this, and this is really has to do with the spread of our groups in the territorial sense. And I think this is very, very important. It has to do with federalism, among other things, namely whether certain groups are sitting, living in a very defined region in the country. Everybody in this region speaks the same language, or mm-hmm. is of the same religion, or is of the same race, or, which is a territorial concentration of groups, or whether these different groups are totally dispersed. I mean, you cannot deal on a group basis. I think this is really what the world history has shown so far, by and large, unless there is a territorial concentration. The moment you have a territorial concentration of some people, then everybody is of this group. Everybody in Scotland is a Scot, let's say. So this is different. Scotsmen in London, I mean, they have their personal sort of feelings about it, but they cannot claim anything as Scotsmen. But as long as they do live in Scotland. This is the Swiss situation. This is, to a very large extent, the Indian situation. This is not the situation in North America,
where there's a great deal of mobility.
Other than in Canada, where in Canada you have the example where you have Quebec, which is a territorial concentration of people of a different culture, a different language. So they were working, and still are working, very hard on their group rights. You mm-hmm. cannot do this unless you would have even more of a concentration of black people, let's say, in some states of the American South, which of course is, some people have thought that this is what is kind of situation, what it is. But it doesn't work with the Jews, it doesn't work with the Italians, it doesn't work with American Ukrainians, and so on and so forth. I think this is a very crucial element. And here territorialism as one of the ways of dealing with this problem comes in. Mm-hmm. Now, you can, as a central government, want to overcome this sort of thing. You can try to intermingle people, say, well, do not let them concentrate. Take them out of where they are, so there is no chance for a territorial kind of solution.
That isn't going to work. Hedva Ben Israel?
I want to add 2 points. One, if to take up your philosophic general point, if one may put in a sort of value remark, the ideal of a nation state or of a homogeneity and ethnic non-diversity, but rather ethnic uniformity. Some people discuss the problem of the modern. Of the modern nation state in terms of whether it's good or bad for our developing cultures to live in constant interaction with other cultures within the same state.
And what are you going to tell me, that it is good?
I think it probably is more fruitful in the sense of developing a culture, or whether unity and racial, biological, linguistic, cultural, historical, whether that does not breed some sort of stultification of a certain culture. This is one point I just wanted to bring in. The other point is that we have so many ethnic groups nowadays talking about their linguistic rights and regional rights, and I mean in France, in Spain, in North America, etc. But they do not always think it out to the end of, say, the economic results of greater root rights. I mean, say if indigenous groups claim their ancient rights to land and water, which precede the state, which are above the law, which really go back to primordial rights, which they claim, and to use their languages and so forth, they do not always take into account that this will mean, this may mean condemning them to a sort of, say, agricultural existence and to bar them from all the economic opportunities that go in modern industrialized society.
Well, the example of the American Indians comes to mind, despite their own best intentions and efforts and the efforts of,
the
government.
I think, a very basic and very important problem in present-day society that you cannot have both self-segregation culturally and yet economic integration because of the sophistication of modern industrial society.
Well, we go to the point that Emmanuel Gutman made about territoriality.
It's a question of how people see themselves. And people, I think, see themselves as belonging to groups. The question is, what kind of groups and what do they want for their group? The only solution, if we can call it that, that I see is that there will be new balances of conflicting aspirations in this respect. I mean, if you get a cultural group that will be satisfied with developing its own culture, etc., etc., but feels at the same time quite safe and secure within a larger political unit from which it benefits, then it will not ask for splitting off or for separating, and it will make do with what it's got. On the other hand, if you have a large unit which is strong, then it will create a new nation state, and you will have the old thing rolling again.
What we're talking about is the politicizing of basic human notions such as dignity and self-respect and self-confidence. Are we on the right track with that, Emmanuel?
Yes, I mean, this is the problem we are talking about. Of course, this is broadening it out very much because now this really gets outside our specific topic of multi-ethnic society. This is, we have a state within which you have ethnic groups. From this point of view, you can look at world society. You can say, well, one of the answers would be a world state. You'll get over all of this problem. Well, it's difficult for me sort of to conceive this, but I give you an answer which is more or less on this line. The assertiveness of many countries in the West, including Europe, including in Africa, in Latin America, against, what shall we call it, American cultural imperialism, which maybe the Americans actually don't even intend to, but as a fact is, there's sort of a unification, a homogenization of the Coca-Cola and the jeans culture. Now,
exactly
there is such
right.
a thing. And you say, well, this is what everybody will be the same. Yeah. Everybody will now be the same from this point of view. But there is this assertiveness, which is a self-confidence of people, say, well, we are different. We speak French. Mm-hmm. This is not the question of some people in France against the majority French. This is now the French people, or the Germans, or the Swedes, or the English, or whoever they are, the Israelis, or the Arabs, or the Panamanes, for that matter, mm-hmm. who have this sort of assertion. So I think it's not a question of selfishness, but it's really the question of a self-conception of what as a people you are. Mm-hmm. And this includes certain elements which are different from others. Mm-hmm. The question is how make it work, that at the same time you have culturally your own kind of mixture, mm-hmm. and you don't have to fight about it, mm-hmm. and make a war about it and quarrel about it the way we do. This is, but I have no solution to this question, I must say.
Emmanuel Gutman and Hedva Ben Israel from the Hebrew University were talking about multi-ethnic societies. Let me give you a proposition and discuss this for a moment for me. Is politics stronger than culture, or is culture stronger than politics? When we try to figure out the multi-ethnic society and its perils and rewards.
Well, Hedva? It's never the same. I mean, uh-huh. it's in different historical periods. You have a different proportion of cultural and political demands, mm-hmm. and the historical course of it has been most of the time that you start with cultural demands and then you go over to political demands. But it has also been the case that once you've got all your political rights, then you go on to cultural demands because uh-huh. you can, because you feel strong enough to do it. I think what you were trying to do, Wayne, in your previous question was to go down to fundamentals, mm-hmm. to say what in human nature causes all of this. And I think our joint answer, if I may say so, was that there was the question of self-perception, of self-identity,
dignity.
And dignity, mm-hmm. is probably, in as far as human nature is concerned, is the core problem of it. But I think this does not really lead us very far, because it's the collective combinations that cause all the problems of multi-ethnic societies. And there are endless combinations that are possible, and therefore endless balances, mm-hmm. of desires. And this is why I think there's not one solution that will be right for every place, but there will be many different solutions, mm-hmm. in different places according to their condition. At the moment, not led to this idea automatically when you see the uprising of fundamental and fanatic movements in various parts of the world. But I don't think it's necessarily going to stay that way.
Yeah, there's nothing deterministic about it, I agree.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to a discussion about multi-ethnic societies and international politics. My guests were Hedva Ben Israel and Emmanuel Gutman of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Hedva Ben Israel worked on a forthcoming book about moral judgment in modern historiography. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Multi-Ethnic Societies, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, the topic will be literature and gender. My guests will be Robert Hanning of Columbia University and Linda Kaufman of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for a discussion about multi-ethnic societies, social and political combinations of race, religion, language, and culture. How did multi-ethnic societies originate? And how do historians measure their impact upon modern international politics? Some answers and insights from two scholars from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Multi-Ethnic Societies, the topic this week on Soundings, from the National Humanities Center on this station.